You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
There's a lot I could talk about at the top of today's show. The Republican Party's new and horrible and obscene tax bill, or Mike Locker Up Flynn's guilty plea, lock his ass up. How about that? Or the mounting evidence that Trump is impaired and it's 25th Amendment time in the city. Or I could treat you all to my annual Christmas Isn't Sexy and there are already enough unsexy pictures of naked people in front of Christmas trees with bows on their junk, so there's no need for you to put that pic you took last night online ever rant. But I think I'm going to open with a little sex advice instead. Unsolicited advice, everyone's favorite kind. This is for the guys out there who are worried that the current cultural reckoning about sexual assault and harassment, or as some have called it, this witch hunt, but actually it's a warlock hunt and there are way more warlocks out there than anyone realized and those bastards probably needed culling. Anyway, some guys out there are worried that this reckoning is going to put an end to flirting and criminalize any quote-unquote workplace romances. My leaping off point today for the opening of the show is the letter I got at Savage Love. This guy writes, the initial approach to another person must happen without consent. In the ideal world, such an approach would always be respectful, and if the approach is declined, the no would be respected. Similarly, there will almost always be some level of power difference between people. I would rather live in a world where women were empowered to say no or yes if they desired, regardless of a power differential. I want to live in a world where a president could ask an intern, hey, you wanna? And the intern could say, tempting, but no. Perhaps if enough people in positions of power made a public commitment to respecting no, we could eliminate the implied threat. If no is a perfectly acceptable response to an approach, even with a power differential, then men will have more freedom to ask. Yeah, because if there's anything we've learned over the last couple of months, it's that men don't feel free to ask or grab. All right, that's unfair. Let me back up just a little bit. Shitty men feel free to ask and or grab. Shitty men feel entitled to do whatever the hell they want, while conscientious men are more cautious and thoughtful and respectful. Perhaps some are so cautious and thoughtful and respectful that they can't even bring themselves to make an approach at all. And maybe, yeah, maybe if we lived in a world where all things were equal, men and women for starters, the social norms proposed by my reader here would be workable. Men could ask for whatever they want, and women could say no without fear. And presumably women could ask too if, you know, women experienced sexual desire in the absence of male attention. But we don't live in that world, and I don't see that world coming into existence anytime soon. That said, I do think consent can exist in the presence of a power differential. It often does. And the initial approach, asking someone out, asking someone if they might be up for dinner or drinks or dick, often exists, yes, in a kind of pre-consensual limbo. You don't know that the answer is no until you ask. And if someone asks you out respectfully and you say no and they leave you alone and don't bother you or ask you out again and again and again, and there isn't a huge power differential that makes just an ask feel coercive, that's not sexual harassment. But guys, you have to remember, we have to remember that women are socialized to defer to men and that we are all primates hardwired to defer to power. Sometimes we abuse our power over others knowingly and maliciously, looking at you, Harvey Weinstein. Sometimes we aren't considering our relative power and wind up abusing it thoughtlessly. And then there's violence. We have to factor that into the conversation too. We have to remember that too. A dude making that initial approach can feel as if he's framing it in an entirely non-threatening manner, rolling it out in a non-threatening manner. The intent of the approacher, usually male, can be non-threatening. The approacher can be ready to hear that no and respect that no, but the approachee, usually female, can experience that approach very differently. Because men don't move through their lives deflecting near constant unwanted sexual attention. And we aren't subjected to epidemic levels of sexual violence. And consequently, we don't live with the daily fear that we could be the victims of sexual violence at any time and in any place, like Matt Lauer's office. Women do live with that fear daily. So there's often a huge disconnect between what a man thinks he's doing and how a woman experiences what that man is doing, because her perceptions are shaped by the experience and fear of sexual violence. Now, some men get this. They're aware, they're woke, and their aware wokeness informs their approach in a really positive way. They've worked out how to make that initial approach to a woman in a way that feels safe and empowers her to say no. Other men are aware of these dynamics and intentionally and maliciously exploit them to get what they want. They intimidate and they pressure. The rest, perhaps most men, are just oblivious to it. You know, I have an idea that I think would help, a little something that I frequently advise people to do that I would love to see broadly adopted. Because I think it would help if all people making that initial approach, men and women, queer and straight, strangers and familiars, invited a no explicitly and pledged to respect that no as a preamble to the approach before the ask. Hey, I wanted to ask you something, but first, I want you to know that if the answer is no, you can say no. I won't argue with you or hold it against you or sulk or get weird. I promise in advance. All right, what I wanted to ask you was ... Finally, a quick word about socialization, something that keeps coming up in these conversations about how we're going to address this problem. I wanted to vote up, or upvote, however you say that, something feminist author, essayist, and polemicist Laura Kipnis said on I Have to Ask, Isaac Chotiner's excellent podcast.
You know, it is really the case that in conventional femininity, a sort of fearfulness about sexual matters is part of the deal. And I do think that's something that we could all try to unlearn, particularly those of us, the women who are the most afflicted by it. I mean, if we're asking men to unlearn elements of male socialization, the question I ask is, are there elements of female socialization that we also might want to ditch and that impede us in, the workplace or in, moving comfortably through the social world?
Women are asking, women are demanding that men unlearn some of the things we're socialized to believe, that we are entitled to women's bodies, that women's bodies are our property. It's something that gay men have to unlearn too, myself included. At the same time, we do need to ditch, as Kipnis said, some aspects of female socialization. We can do both these things at the same time. Submissiveness, deference to men, gotta be ditched. But before we can do that, if we're ever going to do that, we have to tackle violence. That's the lock we must pick. That is the keystone. Female fear, that cowering that Kipnis talks about, it doesn't exist and isn't perpetuated in a vacuum. It is informed and reinforced by sexual violence, male violence, targeting women. So why can't she just say no? Why aren't women free to say no? Someone tweeted that out. Women should just say no. And someone responded by tweeting out links to stories about women who did say no to strangers on the street or classmates or people they knew and were murdered by the men they said no to. So long as women live in fear, again, a fear that far too many men are oblivious to, nothing will be easy, nothing will change, and no one will be free. All right, coming up on today's show, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, the weirdest gift offer I've ever heard, someone getting sex shamed at an Airbnb, and on the Magnum subscription edition, the Magnum subscription ad-free, twice as long edition of the Savage Lovecast that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com. Stand-up comedian Cameron Esposito joins us to talk about her new album with her wife, Rhea Butcher, and to help a listener with a problem concerning weed. All that coming up. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Casper, the online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. Save $50 toward a mattress purchase by going to casper.com/savagelove and entering the promo code SAVAGELOVE. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Wink, the wine club that helps you find the wines that you will love. Get $20 off your first order when you go to trywink.com/savage. This episode is brought to you by Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Check out this week's menu and get $30 off your first order with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. Early 20s college student out here in the Southwest, and I had a kind of an odd question maybe you can help me with. So, long story short, I started seeing this girl back in, I want to say April. And, you know, we were just physical, you know, nothing too big. I just got out of a relationship the previous month. So did she. And then, you know, we just basically were just physical. And then it turned into something more. And long story short, now since it's November, we finally decided to be like, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend, as it were. And it's odd for me because I hate to use this term, but I'm used to dating crazy girls. To give you an idea of the last two relationships I had, one cheated on me constantly, threatened to kill herself after I found out and wanted to leave. And the other one turned out was engaged to another person while we were dating. As you can tell, that one didn't last very long because it's hard to keep a secret like that. This girl is very understanding about my busy schedule and I'm understanding about hers. And it's odd because it's like an actual adult relationship. And like, I feel kind of reprehensible about it because I'm not used to it. I mean, I care about this girl. I really, really do. I want to be with her and she wants to be with me and everything's fine. But is it normal to have this feeling of kind of oddness whenever you date someone that isn't, you know, insane?
Are you disappointed that your new girlfriend isn't crazy like your exes were all crazy? Is it that you got used to being in relationships with people who generated a lot of drama? Are you one of those people who regards drama as proof of passion and proof of the intensity of the connection? That, say, your ex with the fiancé, did you look at that and think, well, I'm so hot, I'm so attractive that this person was willing to risk all that or toss that all away, and that made the intensity of the connection or the sex or the moments that you did share with this person that much more titillating, that much more interesting and compelling? Are you a contributor to this, to this dynamic, that you keep ending up in relationships with girls who are nuts? Because I'm not sure why you're calling except to say, phew, you should be calling to say, oh my God, thank God I finally met somebody sane after a string of not very sane folks in my dating and romantic life. And sometimes we draw the short straw by accident several times in a row. Sometimes we need to look at the choices we're making and ask ourselves if we're intentionally seeking out this kind of drama and damage. So the fact that you called leads me to believe that on some level you might have been intentionally seeking out this kind of drama and damage. And there's something about the absence of it in your current relationship that has you doubting it or wondering whether you want to stay or wondering if there's something kind of photo negative, reverse image, double back flip wrong about the relationship that you're in, because there's nothing wrong with the relationship that you're in. And you're used to there being something really wrong, a problem to solve in the relationships that you were in the past. So I would encourage you to think about the choices you made in the past. Think about whether they were intentional. Ask yourself what it is that you want. And if you want drama and conflict, get yourself a therapist, because drama and conflict come in all relationships, all long-term relationships. However low conflict they are, however sane the person that you're with, no two people are a perfect fit. You don't have to seek out drama and complication and craziness, because that will come in its own course. That will come in due time. You will have to pay that bill. It's almost like a little bit of drama and crazy builds up over time, and every once in a while you get zapped by it and it just happens. You don't have to seek it out. But if you're just calling because you're dumbstruck by your luck and you needed to vent, you needed to share, then yay and props. But I suspect that you called because it's not just this is an unfamiliar feeling, being with someone who's low conflict, low drama, not crazy. But I wonder if you don't miss the conflict and drama and crazy. And if you do, if I'm right, my hunch is right, and you on some level miss the drama, conflict, and crazy, and you think there's something wrong with your current relationship because it lacks those things, that's something you might want to unpack with a therapist about the choices you make and the kinds of people that you're attracted to.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 32-year-old, mostly straight cis guy. I've been with my partner for 4 years, and near the beginning of 2017, I started to realize that I'm poly, but my partner is struggling with this. My partner and I share finances, pets, a home, and a wonderful life together. The background is that I've had significant relationships in the past, one of which was longer than this one, and had always struggled to stay faithful to them. With my current partner, I haven't physically cheated, but this realization was spurred on by two emotional affairs over the course of the relationship. We've worked through these and consciously managing my behavior while we talk things through. My girlfriend has worked on and off as a sex worker during our relationship, so we've already had to renegotiate boundaries in the past. We opened the conversation. I told her I was poly. She tried very hard to hold that space for me and acknowledge what I was saying, though she did become very upset. I know this would be a very difficult thing for her to hear, so I've been trying to shoulder as much work as possible. I've read through every book I can, trawled through every online resource possible, So I bought her a book that I think she would enjoy and find non-threatening about 5 months ago and asked her to read it. She agreed, but still hasn't read it. Every now and then I gently ask how far she's gotten. The answer is always that she hasn't read it recently, but we'll get back on it and then she'll read a couple of sections. I'm aware she's hoping on some level that we don't have to have this conversation, and I'm trying to approach this slowly, but I'm starting to struggle. If I don't broach it again, I think we'll never talk, but when I have in the past, after that initial conversation, she becomes hostile and cold. I know she has abandonment issues for very valid reasons from her past. How do I go about this? Even if she can't do it, I'm desperate not to have to choose between who I am and the woman I love.
This is where I get in trouble with some people in the polyamorous community. I don't think anyone is poly in the same way I don't think anyone is monogamy. I think poly is a relationship model. Openness is also a relationship model that's different from poly that works for some and doesn't work for others. And I think monogamous is a relationship model that works for some and not for others. And it sounds like what you've determined in this 4-year long-term relationship is that monogamy sexually and emotionally isn't for you, that you have the capacity to love more than one person at a time and the desire to, and that is the relationship model that is the better choice for you. And that you will be happier in that relationship. And maybe that's me saying that you are poly, and so you realizing that you're poly. But I don't think that anyone is naturally monogamous. So I guess the base set for me is everybody is capable of having sex with more than one person at a time, loving more than one person at a time, perhaps hardwired to seek out sex and affection even for more than one. So maybe I do believe that everyone is poly, and then there's this monogamous relationship model that's imposed on top of that. But that's a how many angels can dance on the head of a pin conversation for another call. You need to talk to your girlfriend about what it is that you want going forward, about the price of admission you're willing to pay and the price of admission you are not willing to pay. For 4 years in this relationship, you have been monogamous, you've struggled with monogamy, you've had a couple of emotional affairs, and now you know yourself to be incapable of keeping a monogamous commitment, of honoring a monogamous commitment over the long haul. You have no interest in honoring a monogamous commitment over the long haul. And so the price of admission now shifts to her. Is she willing to keep you, to pay the price of admission, of allowing you to have concurrent sexual and emotional attachments to others? Is that the price of admission she's willing to pay to be in this relationship with you, as you have paid the price of admission for 4 years of being monogamous? If not, if monogamy is something that she insists on, if she requires it, if that's the relationship model that works best for her, you're 30 years old. You're still young. Presumably she's still young. Presumably you're not dating Theresa May. And you can part, not because you hate each other, not because anybody did anything terrible, because you wanted different things in your romantic and sexual life. And it was kind of an irreconcilable difference. Just like having kids, there's no compromise. There's no half a kid, no half a live kid. When it comes to monogamy, there's really no compromise. It means you're not fucking other people and not having intense emotional attachments to other people, period. So there's no middle ground. And if what you determine is you're poly and she's monogamy, or you prefer the polyamorous relationship model and she prefers the monogamous relationship model, there's no amount of assigned reading that's going to bring her around. You'll have to part. That said, if you know people in poly relationships, it is kind of a cliche that it was one person's idea and the other person put up with it or went along. It was a price of admission they were willing to pay to keep that person in their life. And then their fears, maybe your girlfriend has fears around what polyamory would mean, what having concurrent romantic and sexual relationships would mean. And they find once they sort of reluctantly, PUDs I call them, poly under duress, PUDs, once PUDs agree to polyamory, they find that their fears were unfounded, that even their lives have improved, that they end up being in a relationship that brings a lot into their life that their partner didn't bring into their life and kind of completes them. And they move from being PUDs, poly under duress, to people who are happily poly. Most people that you meet who are poly, most couples that made the transition from monogamy to polyamory, it was one person's idea, the other reluctantly went along. If they're still together 2, 5, 10 years later, it's because it's now what both want, and it makes both happy. Maybe your girlfriend can get there. Some people only get there when it's an ultimatum. Some people only get there when it's really laid out to them that this is the only way to keep me. the only way that we can continue on in this relationship. And there's drama and there's angst and grief and fingernail marks on the floor because someone's being dragged toward it. And they are a PUD briefly, poly under duress. And they're experimenting with whether this works for them or not. And some find it doesn't work for them and they break up. It's the end of the relationship. But some find that they do. Go out there, maybe with your girlfriend, go to some polyamorous community meetups, talk to some couples who made the transition from monogamy to polyamory, and maybe they can alleviate her fears. Maybe it would be more effective than assigned reading, than giving her a book, actually talking to some people who've walked the walk, who've lived what you two are going through right now, this transition, and came out the other side, not one getting everything he wants and the other miserably acquiescing, but came out on the other side realizing that this was better for both. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Casper, the online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and passing those savings directly onto you. Casper's mattress is an obsessively engineered mattress at a very fair price. It's made of supportive memory foam for a sleep surface with just the right sink and just the right bounce. Plus, its breathable design sleeps cool to help you regulate your temperature through the night, and Casper mattresses are made in the USA. Terry and I, me and my husband, we sleep on a Casper mattress every night, and we just ordered a second one for our guest room, so we are genuine fans. Casper mattresses come delivered to your door in a compact box, and it's kind of magical to open it. It's like a genie mattress unfolding. You can buy it easily online and completely risk-free. Casper offers free delivery in the U.S., Canada, and now in the U.K., and painless returns within a 100-day period, so you don't have to lie down in a showroom. You can save an additional $50 toward a mattress purchase by going to casper.com/savagelove and entering the promo code savagelove. That's casper.com/savagelove and promo code savagelove. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 28-year-old bi female, and I started dating a guy back in the summer very briefly. He lives far away from me, and we knew each other from where I used to live, and we started a phone dating relationship, and eventually he came out to visit me for a week. And in that time, he confessed his love to me, and I realized I wasn't attracted to him. So we had to untangle the relationship, and I broke things off with him. And he took it really well, actually, and wanted to stay friends, and so we've remained friends in, you know, our long-distance way. But it's been pretty clear over this time that there's an imbalance. He puts a lot more effort into staying in touch. He seems to be thinking about me a lot and he's very thoughtful. And it's all good things, but it feels unrequited. And it's sort of recently culminated to a point where I thought, you know, I need to set a boundary, which is that for my birthday in October, he made these beautiful handmade gifts and sent them all to me in succession. And I just thought this is, you know, over the top and it's too much. I need to let him know. So what's also happening in my life is that my father is in end stage chronic kidney disease and needs a kidney stat. And I was planning to give my father a kidney. And it turns out that our blood is not compatible. So basically what's happening now is we're entering into a system in which we exchange kidneys with other pairs of people like us. But the thing is about this system is the wait time is long. It can be sometimes up to a year. And my dad needs a kidney now because his symptoms are getting worse. So how this all connects is that former lover that I was talking about in the beginning, he and I talked on the phone today. And I thought it was a good time for me to bring up boundaries and ask him to back off a little bit. But before we had a chance to get there, he told me that he's been researching a lot on kidney donations and wants to offer my father a kidney. So as you can imagine, I am a bit torn. On one hand, I don't want him to do it. I don't want to sort of allow that person into my space. And it increases our intimacy and level of interaction and connection. And of course, it's a big favor. And I don't want to feel like I owe him anything. On the other hand, this is my father's life. It would increase his quality of life and also his life expectancy if we were to follow through on the offer and if it were to work out.
On the one hand, if you accept his offer, you are going to be in his debt. He did save your father's life. On the other hand, if you don't accept his offer, your dad dies. On the other hand, the third hand, it's not you who has to accept the offer. It's your father who has to accept the offer. It's a way, really, of putting your entire family in his debt. And maybe he's hoping your whole family will rally to his side, will root for him, will pressure you to date him again. But if that's not going to happen and never going to happen, you should just tell him that. And you should recuse yourself from the whole conversation. Look, if you want to talk to my dad about giving him a kidney, that's a conversation that you can have with my dad. It doesn't involve me because you are not my boyfriend. You are a stranger to me. We are not together. If you have this altruistic impulse that isn't going to get you into my pants, that in no way is going to make me feel obligated to date you again or see you again, please offer my dad your kidney. Or you could say all of this after he offers your dad his kidney, after his kidney is safely in your dad. If you want to err on the side of saving your father's life, you could have the boundaries conversation after the surgery. Or for your own comfort, your own peace of mind, you could have that boundary conversation with him before the surgery. This is a Sex and Relationship Advice podcast, and everyone knows that a glass of wine, strategically employed, isn't exactly necessary to facilitate what we're talking about here. But, well, sometimes that glass of wine can really help. Introducing Wink, spelled W-I-N-C. Wink makes it easy to discover great wine because Wink's wine experts select wines matched to your taste. Personalized for you, shipped right to your door, and starting at just $13 a bottle. There's nothing like coming home to a box of delicious Wink wine selected just for you. It's the best day of your month, I promise. Just fill out Wink's palate profile quiz, answer a few simple questions that your average store clerk wouldn't think to ask and couldn't translate into a wine recommendation. Questions like, how do you take your coffee? And how do you feel about blueberries? Then Wink sends wines curated to your taste. The more wines you rate, the more personalized your monthly selections become. And each month there are new delicious wines, like the super popular Summer Water Rosé and Folly of the Beast, the Pinot Perfect for the season. Wink also makes a great gift this holiday season. You can send personalized gift cards and let your recipients choose their wine from Wink's great selection. You don't have to guess what they like. Wink will figure that out. No membership fees, skip any month, cancel any time. Shipping is complimentary, and if you don't like a bottle they send you, they will replace it with a bottle you will love, no questions asked. Discover great wine today. Go to trywink.com/savage. You'll get $20 off your first shipment. That's trywink.com/savage for $20 off. And to support the Savage Lovecast again, trywink.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I am a longtime listener in Chicago. I have a question for you. My boyfriend of a year and I are about to move in together, and that's wonderful. And a year has just been a good pace and enough time, you know, to get to know him. But the problem is that he went ahead and decorated my daughter's bedroom for her. My daughter is 6. And he just took it upon himself to just do it all out, just her room the way that he saw best fit, because it has to match the house. When my daughter saw her room, she burst into tears, screaming and crying for the last month that she didn't get to pick. I'm kind of drawing the line with these Groucho Marx posters, because what little girl wants to look at pictures of an old man? I just don't know if he did this to be nice, you know, and helpful and like, oh, that's so sweet to surprise her, even though, you know, the bedroom looks like a hospital room. Or if he used it as a tool of control and if it's manipulative, like this is, I want what I want. And so I just don't know whether or not I should file this away in my red flag filing cabinet. How do I go about talking to him about this without seeming ungrateful? You know, I've tried to like put stuffies and Hello Kitty dolls on the bed and trying to make it more inviting. You know, we've bounced back from motels and domestic violence shelters and couches, and talk about not being able to really choose your decor there. And I just want her to feel welcomed and that this is her room, but none of it reflects that it is. So I would love your advice.
Don't move in with this motherfucker. Period. The end. Don't move in with this motherfucker. your 6-year-old girl is crying for a month and he is putting his foot down and insisting that the room has to match the rest of the house? What kind of emotionally manipulative bullshit is that? And yeah, that's a red flag, but I think that's the first of many flags to come. What he's signaling to you is your daughter's feelings matter less than his desire not to have a thematically consistent decoration scheme throughout the house, which no one does and is complete bullshit, but to control you and manipulate you and to separate you from your daughter. He's putting you in a position where you're having to choose between your daughter's sense of emotional security, your daughter's desires around creating finally for herself a space that's her own, and his feelings and his desires. He's putting you in a position where you have to choose between him and your daughter, and it won't be the last time if you acquiesce. If you want to move in with this guy, you go to him and say, I am not moving in with you if this can't be undone. It is her room. Let her decorate her room the way she would like it decorated. If he can't let Groucho Marx go, if he can't let this 6-year-old girl that he is going to be the step-parent to, potentially, have her own room in her own way, what else is he going to deny her? How many other ways is he going to find to come between you and her, to pit you against each other in the years ahead? Yeah, this is a test. It's sort of like all those times I say, this is when you tell somebody one thing about you and their reaction tells you everything you need to know about them. You need to go tell him one thing about you, that you will not put up with him pitting you against your daughter, that you will not put up with him prioritizing a decorating scheme over your daughter's sense of safety and security. And his reaction to that one thing that you're telling him, tells you everything you need to know about him. If he blows up at you, if he freaks out at you, if he continues to dig his heels in, he has told you that he is not someone that your daughter is going to be safe around, emotionally, perhaps even physically. That's what early red flag signal is. Worst red flags to come down the road. So yeah, if he insists, if he blows up, if he's an asshole, and you know what? The fact that right now you're afraid to have this conversation with him is a red flag all by itself. Which is why I opened my response with, don't move in with this motherfucker. But if you want to give him one last chance, go to him and say, you can't do this to a 6-year-old girl. You can't do this to my 6-year-old girl. If you are taking us in, if we are moving in together, you have to let go of control of this space. It is her room, and she has to make it her own, for her own sense of safety and comfort, particularly after the traumas that she has endured in the last 6 years. Don't move her in with some dude whose first impulse is to re-traumatize your daughter, to inflict a new trauma on her. That is a fucking May Day parade's worth of red flags. Call us back and please let us know how that conversation with him went. And again, you're telling him one thing. You're not going to let him do this to your daughter. He's telling you everything. His response tells you everything you're going to need to know. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country, and certainly in my house. And Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone, including formerly hopeless in the kitchen types like me. With the holidays coming up, you can boost your cooking game by trying Blue Apron. Blue Apron helps you improve your cooking skills because they give you step-by-step instructions and offer a huge selection of cuisines and cooking styles. If you are new to cooking, Blue Apron is a really great way to start. Here are some menu items coming up this week: baked deviled chicken with sweet potatoes and collard greens, and black rice sesame noodles with beet bok choy and peanut salad. Check out this week's menu and get $30 off your first order with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/savage. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so do not wait. That's blueapron.com/savage. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Hi, Dan and the gang. I am calling about, I guess, a relationship issue. What it is... I'm an organic farmer growing organic vegetables, flowers, and herbs for about 12, 13 years now. And I work on somebody else's farm now, and they have guns. And currently going through a little bit of anxiety with all the things that have been happening lately. And I literally don't, I mean, I feel like making an ultimatum of, it's freaking me, the expert in the field, the only one that knows what's going on, actually, on your farm, or the guns. I don't want to be around them. I am, like I say, experiencing anxiety as of late, and I can't keep going and showing up and knowing that the guns, sure, they're in some fucking safe downstairs, but still, they pull them out, and it makes me feel completely unsafe. So, is it time that we make a stand and we start dividing our, is it time that I make a stand and start separating myself from people that have guns and that feel like they're awesome and can, you know, just swing them around wherever the frick they go? So that's what my question is. I don't know what to do. This is a current event, and it's getting worse every single day. Is it time that we start distancing ourselves and saying, look, that ain't me. I don't want to show up if that's what you've got downstairs.
I fucking hate guns. I would like to see the Second Amendment repealed, amended out of existence. So I'm kind of with you on the gun issue. I don't think we should tolerate open carry assholes. I don't think we should tolerate AR-15s and AK-47s. I don't think we should tolerate or allow for the private ownership of weapons of war. That said, about the only place that I can think that a gun might be a legitimate thing to own and to have is on a fucking farm. I have a really good friend who's a farmer here. I've been to his farm many times. He has guns on his farm that he uses for legitimate farmy sort of shit. He raises pigs and slaughters pigs himself. And he puts down pigs, he puts down his own animals with his own rifle. And that's why he has a gun on the farm. Also has the gun on the farm because every once in a while there's probably a predator that has to be taken out. And I don't want to hear about that, but that probably happens. He doesn't have an AR-15. He doesn't have an Uzi. He doesn't have a machine gun. He doesn't have weapons of war. But he has on the farm a gun that he uses for farm-appropriate, gotta-have-a-gun reasons. Wouldn't want him slaughtering pigs with a hammer. That would be cruel and protracted. So the question I would ask you, and you didn't offer any of this information, is those guns, they're in safes. What guns are they? And when they do haul them out, for what purpose do they haul them out? Are they hauling out a bunch of those crazy fucking weapons of war that insecure gun fondlers in America own millions of and fantasize about using them for the only thing that they're designed to be used for, which is mowing down as many humans as quickly as possible? Are those the guns that the people on this farm who are relying on your expertise own? And you don't want to be around those kinds of guns or around the people who would own those kinds of guns, people who fantasize about killing a lot of people? Then yeah, you should walk and you should tell them why you're going to walk. But if the gun that they own is a shotgun or a rifle that is appropriate to farm work in a farm setting, and it's in a safe when it's not being used, as my friend's gun is on his farm, then I think you're being a little rigid and a little black and white and a little doctrinaire. And you need to allow for the fact that, and I need to allow for the fact, and no one hates guns as much as I hate guns, especially in urban settings. We need to allow for the fact that there are places and times when private gun ownership is legitimate. I think that bar should be set a whole lot higher than it's set right now, around licensing, around training, around safe storage, around penalties for people who don't store their firearms safely, and then their kids blow their fucking heads off, or blow the neighbor's head off, or blow mom's head off. Yeah, I'm right there with you on every sort of gun control impulse and on drawing the line, particularly around people who own weapons of war, gun fondlers, open carry assholes, shouldn't be tolerated. But a farm setting? I want more information before I tell you that you should make a Norma Rae, there's a 40-year-old pop culture reference for the kids, Norma Rae self-conscious or self-righteous stand.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 44-year-old heterosexual woman living in a large city in the Midwest. I am in a wonderful relationship with my boyfriend, and we've recently opened up our relationship to include other couples. It's been great so far. We've met some very compatible people who share our kinks. We recently traveled to another city for a music festival where we rented a basement apartment through a popular room sharing app. During that weekend, we invited a couple over who we've been with before. They had gotten a babysitter, spent a couple hours with us, and a great time was had by all. When I received my review from the homeowner, she wrote that she heard our loud sexual activity and was sickened to think about the task of having to clean up after us. She said she felt uncomfortable in her own home and that I should have used better judgment. I immediately felt ashamed about the evening, as well as the new lifestyle that me and my boyfriend had really begun to enjoy. But then after a long talk with my boyfriend, we started to think. We probably could have been more considerate about the thin walls, although it was between the hours of 8 and 10 p.m. According to her house rules, it was okay to have guests over, and we did clean up, took out our garbage that included our condoms, and stripped down the bed of linens and put them in the hamper. We agreed we weren't ashamed of our activity with our friends, but felt that this homeowner, who was a young woman in her mid-30s, she had said that her husband was out of town on a guy trip and they had no kids, somewhat sex-shamed us. I wonder if she would have had said anything if she knew just me and my boyfriend were down there having sex. Also, I host my home on this room-sharing app, and I surrender some privacy knowing people are on vacation and have sex and masturbate and pick their nose and so on and so on. So Dan, we need your opinion. We're new to our new lifestyle and we're wondering if we broke some sort of rule or was she out of line?
You rented a basement apartment. The rules allowed you to have guests over and presumably there was nothing in the rules preventing you or banning you from fucking the guests you had over during reasonable hours, 8 to 10 p.m., perfectly reasonable. So, yeah, it seems like your host overreacted and indeed sex-shamed you both, or all four of you. That said, she heard you fucking. She said she was sickened at the thought of having to clean up. Of course, she didn't have to clean up. You guys were responsible. You cleaned up after yourselves, but maybe she was just sickened at the thought of it when she heard you fucking, thinking you were swinging from the chandeliers. And there's a lot of people out there who are really judgy about couples or about group sex, about non-monogamous relationships. And it sounds like she's one of them. Presumably she would have been fine if she overheard a little bit of fucking in her house, if it was just the two of you down there. But when she knew there were four of you down there and she overheard fucking, she freaked out. Because what kind of person has group sex? Well, a terrible person. That's what kind of person has group sex. And a lot of people believe that and continue to believe that because most of the people in their lives who are in open relationships aren't out. So they know people who would do this, but they don't know they know them because most people, most straight people like you, most straight people in open relationships aren't out about it because they fear being judged in just this way, in the same way that this woman judged you, said you were sickening. Assumed that you too, if you were the kind of people who would fuck another couple or have an orgy, were the kind of people who are going to kick holes in the wall and pee in the tub and shit on the floor. Because, of course, somebody who would do that kind of perverted sex thing can't be trusted not to wipe their ass on your duvet cover. So if I had to issue a ruling here, yeah, you were sex shamed by your host. That said, you gotta know that in this sort of circumstance, you're in someone's house. And with these stereotypes and fears about dangerous sex maniacs and the way they behave, that you were likely to be judged this way. The odds that you were going to wind up renting a room in a house in some little town where there was a music festival from somebody who was group sex positive, really small, vanishingly small. So if you didn't want to risk this kind of review, you needed to be a little sneakier. I'm not saying that she was in the right. I'm not saying she didn't sex shame you. I'm just saying that this was a semi-predictable outcome of a noisy four-way in someone's house, even though you rented the room, even though the rules allowed for it. A predictable outcome doesn't make it any less of an injustice. It was an injustice. You've been done wrong, but done wrong in kind of a predictable way, in a way that perhaps you could have anticipated. So in the future, maybe get a hotel room where anything goes, or be a little bit quieter and let that be part of the fun, that the four-way is a sneak. It's something you got to get away with. You're putting one over on the proprietor of the little house that you're staying in. That can be sexy, to be naughty, to break the rules. Anyway, there's nothing wrong with you. Don't take it to heart. But in the future, maybe a hotel.
I'm calling in response to episode 579 and the guy who was looking for insults to use in place of pussy, because that is such a loaded term. I'd recommend that you try out wimp, coward, dingus, twerp, loser, idiot, shithead, poser, yellow belly, scumbag, clown, weakling, wastoid, and even turd. While it's great that you want to cycle pussy out of rotation in your vocabulary, make sure you're also thinking about why and how you were using that word in the first place, and whether you were contributing to toxic masculinity and the idea that men shouldn't show vulnerability or lack of physical prowess.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling in response to episode 579, where a male caller called in and said that his girlfriend didn't like being called dude. Here is why. Young men use dude as a way to convey a very stilted emotional relatedness. And using dude is a way to avoid actually being intimate, unlike used in Broad City, where it ends up having a subversive, endearing quality to it. As a heterosexual woman, being called dude by your partner is actually an avoidance of intimacy, not an expression of it.
Hi, I'm calling about episode 579 and that guy whose girlfriend had a problem with being called dude. Personally, I feel empowered when I'm called dude. The way I see it, every time I'm called dude, I feel like I can hear super small cracks zigzagging across the glass ceiling. And that as women where we previously weren't allowed, we've been welcomed. I've been fortunate to be put on a pedestal by a bunch of guys that I dated, and it's lonely up there. Being precious can be exhausting. Instead of being on that pedestal and admired from afar, I want to be respected in person. So I'll gladly climb down from that precious pedestal to be a part of the dude club. And in relationships, being called dude implies a certain trust and intimacy. We aren't just lovers. I'm not just precious to you, but instead we're friends and we're partners. Yes, dude is historically masculine, but it remains just barely masculine these days. Ladies, let's be like Abby and Alana, really charming, adorable dudes.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. It is the holiday gift-giving season. It is upon us, and we have two great gift ideas for you here at the Savage Lovecast. Of course, you can gift the Magnum Edition, the twice-as-long ad-free edition of the Savage Lovecast, to the Savage Lovecast fans on your list. Go to savagelovecast.com and click on Gift. And ITMFA, t-shirts, buttons, hats, lapel pins, bumper stickers, impeach the motherfucker already gear. All proceeds benefit the American Civil Liberties Union, the International Refugee Assistance Project, and Planned Parenthood. Orders in by December 11th. You should have by Christmas. Go to www.itmfa.org. Order some merch. Help three great organizations that are fighting the Trump agenda. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow Cameron Esposito on Twitter at Cameron Esposito. And look for her new album, Back to Back, out this Friday. And be sure to listen to Blabbermouth if you like my political rants at the top of the show. That is The Strangers' other podcast, available wherever fine podcasts are available. And so much at the end of the show this week. Join me in Portland on Thursday, December 21st at Revolution Hall for a holiday special, which I've named Happy Holidays. Get your tickets now. Go to savagelovecast.com/events for more details. All right. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. We will all be back at you next week for an installment of Savage Lovecast. Thanks for downloading.